to thank Michel for all of his work organizing this. This is work I've done in collaboration with Rachel Wardus, who's also here in the audience. And most of the calculations I'm going to show you today were done by our postdoc, Hongyi Chen, at Trent. This work comes out of earlier work that was done by Song Yun when he was a postdoc with us at Trent. He's now at Beijing Normal University. And some of this work is a little bit of it, is based on calculations that were done by a PhD student in our department, Sinan Balut. So the broad goal of our research program is to understand the effects of disorder on strongly correlated materials. And the motivation for this, really from my personal perspective, is that many of the most interesting strongly correlated materials have their electronic properties tuned by chemical doping. And a classic example of this would be lanthanum copper oxide. It's an antiferromagnetic insulator until you add strontium. And when you add strontium, you dope holes into this material and it becomes a high-temperature superconductor. But one of the unintended consequences of doping holes into lanthanum copper oxide is that you disorder the material. And it looks as if you actually disorder this material quite a bit. And I think it's fair to say that the effects of this disorder are generally pretty poorly understood, and generally people deal with this by ignoring them. And so we have this kind of broader goal to understand what actually is disorder doing in materials where strong electronic correlations are important. The goal for this talk is quite a bit more specific. There's a phenomenon which is the disorder-induced zero bias anomaly, and I'll say a few words about what that is in a few minutes. And I'm particularly interested in how this shows up in strongly correlated systems. Okay, so I'll just review for a second what the zero bias anomaly is in conventional materials. If you start, so I'm a theorist here, so I can imagine some non-interacting gas of electrons, and I can either disorder this system or I can introduce interactions. If I start with a density of states which is relatively featureless, not much is going to change qualitatively, right? The disorder tends to smear things out, but if there's nothing there to smear, you just wind up with a flat density of states. Okay. However, if you have a material that has both disorder and interactions, there actually is something qualitative which happens at the Fermi energy. And it was first pointed out by Altshuler and Aronoff back in the very early 1980s that you can understand this phenomenon at the level of Hartree-Fock theory, provided you include disorder in a sufficiently accurate way. And so the idea is that Hartree is easy to understand. That's just treating the charge density as some kind of classical mean field. And the idea is that the charge density rearranges itself in the presence of disorder in some self-consistent way. And as a result of this charge rearrangement, you get a change in the density of states of the Fermi energy. So the Hartree and the exchange self-energies are the two important self-energies when you're doing perturbation theory, the leading order perturbative contributions. And the Hartree self-energy gives you a positive correction to the density of states. So there's an upward cusp that develops at the Fermi energy. And the exchange self-energy gives you a negative contribution to the density of states, so there's a downward cusp. And if you have a finite range interaction, which the Coulomb interaction is, then the exchange self-energy is going to be bigger. And so overall, you're going to get a downward cusp at the Fermi energy. And this has been seen in lots of different experimental systems. I'm showing you here data for lanthanum nickelate that's been doped with manganese. And what you may or may not be able to resolve here, this top curve is with only 5% manganese substituted for the nickel. And you can see that there is a very sharp downward cusp in the density of state that's formed at the Fermi energy. And I've listed a couple of other, sort of half a dozen other papers that I've found where people have observed zero bias anomalies in transition metal oxides. These things have been observed in thin metal films and in thin semiconductor films all over the place. But there are a handful of experiments where people have clearly observed these things in transition metal oxides. And this raises a very interesting question. Is there novel physics associated with the zero bias anomaly in strongly correlated materials? Okay. So let me just continue with my discussion of conventional materials. This is a nice little cartoon. There's lots of ways to understand what's going on with this zero bias anomaly. And the simplest one for me is this notion of level repulsion. So we can imagine a two-site system. So I have a molecule made up of two atoms, and the atoms have atomic orbital energies E1 and E2. And then as I bring these two together to form a molecule, the wave functions start to overlap, and you get this hopping matrix element T, which couples the two atoms. And this is the hybridization to form bonding and antibonding orbitals. Okay, so as a result of this hybridization, you get an antibonding orbital with energy E plus and a bonding orbital with energy E minus. And the amount of shift basically depends on the size of this off-diagonal matrix element T here. Now, what I can do is I can imagine that there's also an interaction between these electrons, and I'm only going to keep the part of this that I'm interested in. I'm going to keep the interaction between the electrons when they're on adjacent atoms, and I'm just going to keep the exchange self-energy and put it into the Hamiltonian, because this is the physics that I'm interested in explaining to you now. And I can, for each pair, E1 and E2, I can calculate this exchange self-energy self-consistently, and then I can calculate the local spectrum. And there's going to be a pair of poles in the local spectrum. So the density of states will have two peaks. And then I can do an average over different values of E1 and E2, and I take them from some uniform distribution, and I get a continuous density of states for the ensemble. And that's this curve here. And what you notice is that the density of states is flat except for a V-shaped dip at the Fermi energy. And that V-shaped dip is only there if I consider this exchange self-energy. Okay, so what's actually going on here? Well, it's not hard to write down an equation for the exchange self-energy. And what you realize very quickly is that the exchange self-energy vanishes if both of these orbitals are on the same side of the Fermi energy. It's only when you have one orbital below the Fermi energy and the other orbital above the Fermi energy that you have a non-vanishing self-energy. So the picture then is that this zero bias anomaly is a result of level repulsion between states which are on opposite side of the Fermi energy. So this is my straw man. I'm setting this up so that I have something to compare my calculations for strongly correlated systems with. Okay? So as best as you can, please retain this in your memory for the next 45 minutes or so while I run over time. Okay, so the standard model of disordered strongly correlated materials is the Anderson-Hubbard model. So the Hubbard model, you imagine you have some lattice of atomic sites, and you can hop, your electron can hop around this lattice of atomic sites. And then you have this U, this interaction, which says that when two electrons occupy the same site, they repel. Okay? And so what's left out of this Hubbard model is any nearest neighbor or next nearest neighbor interactions. Right? The long-range part of the Coulomb interaction is dropped from this this Hamiltonian. And if I want to introduce disorder, the easiest way to do this is to just let the orbital energy at each site be a random variable. So I choose the typical way to do a calculation like this would be to take some finite-sized system with 1,000 atoms in it, for example, and then use a random number generator to generate a set of site energies, and then you can find the eigenvalues and eigenvectors of this Hamiltonian and calculate whatever it is you want. Okay. It's useful for purposes of this talk, for me to say something about the atomic limit. The atomic limit is trivial to solve. Atomic limit just means I turn the hopping off. Okay, so you put an electron on a particular site and it stays there. And so if you look at the local density of states at each site, there are actually two poles, two peaks in the local density of states. There's a peak at the original site energy, and there's also going to be a peak at the original site energy plus U. Okay, and this just comes from the fact that some of the time there might be an electron on that site, and that's going to give you this additional repulsive energy. Okay. Now, the weight of these two peaks depends on the filling. So the entire weight goes into the lower Hubbard orbital here if the site is empty. And the entire weight goes into the upper Hubbard orbital, so there's only a single line, actually, if the site is doubly occupied. If the site is singly occupied, you have an even split. Half the weight is in the lower Hubbard orbital, and half the weight is in the upper Hubbard orbital. Okay, so we have an ensemble of such sites, and then if I go and I ask what's the density of states, that's easy enough to calculate. You get a figure that looks like this. So these tails, these wings out here are coming from singly occupied sites. The red here is the lower Hubbard orbital, and the red here is lower Hubbard orbitals, whereas the blue are upper Hubbard orbitals, and you see that singly occupied contribute weight below the Fermi energy from the lower Hubbard orbitals and above the Fermi energy from upper Hubbard orbitals. And then you get this excess weight close to the Fermi energy, either from empty states belonging to the lower Hubbard orbital or filled sites. It's their upper Hubbard orbital. Okay, it's a bit confusing. Really what I want you to get from this is two things. There's no zero bias anomaly until you turn on the hopping. And second of all, there's actually a fairly diverse set of things going on at the Fermi energy. There are four types of states contributing spectral weight at the Fermi energy. So this is already different from what's happening in a conventional metal. Okay, now this, the Anderson-Hubbard model, when you turn the hopping back on, this is a hard problem, and it's been studied by lots of techniques over the years. Hartree-Fock calculations, I'm just listing a small subset of the total number of calculations that are out there. And more recently, there's been a lot of interest in, dynamical mean field theory calculations where you treat the disorder in some kind of effective medium approximation. Okay, and so here you see a bunch of calculations that I've done. These are representative of what you would find in the literature. The black curve is Hartree-Fock if you don't allow moments to form. So you restrict yourself to be paramagnetic. The red curve is what happens if you allow moments to form. So you get some kind of spin glass forming. And then the blue curve is the dynamical mean field theory with a CPA step added in, coherent potential approximation. And what you see here is you get three very different answers. Okay? And the question is, which is right? Well, actually, it's not so much a question as a statement. This is a hard problem, and it's hard because you're trying to include both strong correlations, which are neglected by the Hartree-Fock, and the details of the spatial distribution of the disorder potential, and that's neglected by this DMFT plus CPA calculation. You're trying to include both of those in your calculation. That's hard to do. So what you do is you do exact diagonalization calculations for small clusters. Okay? And what you find, let me show you up here, when the disorder potential, so the blue curve here is disorder potential much less than the Hubbard U, you find that there's a nice well-developed Mott gap. And then as you increase the amount of disorder, this Mott gap shrinks and closes, and you can see the green curve here is this nice V-shaped density of states, but that doesn't go away as you further increase disorder. It stays there. It never goes away. And so at some point you say to yourself, wait a second, this isn't Mott physics anymore. And you can double check that by doping away from half filling. So you set your chemical potential away from half filling, and you find that this V-shaped dip is still there. So this is not Mott physics. At some point along the way, we've made the crossover to some other type of physics. Okay? An interesting point here is that this zero bias anomaly is negative. It's down. It's a dip. It's not a peak, because both are possible. I said before that in conventional materials, this dip is coming from exchange self-energy, but that in turn comes from the finite range piece of the interaction. Well, here we have a zero range interaction. So there's no exchange self-energy here. What that means is that the physics of this dip is already different from the physics of the zero bias anomaly in conventional materials. Okay, so the approach that we take. We do exact diagonalization calculations for small clusters. And then from that, we get this full Green's function. This is the Green's function of the interacting system. So the density of states comes from the imaginary part of that Green's function. But what we really want to do is look at the self-energy. So for each disorder configuration, we can extract the inelastic self-energy. And then we can use these inelastic self-energies in an approximate expression for the density of states. So I derive an approximate expression for the density of states, and by looking at the contribution that each of these terms, each of these different self-energies makes to that density of states, I can start to narrow down what's going on. What is it that's actually causing this zero bias anomaly to form? So I emphasize, the goal is not to calculate the density of states, but it's to use an approximate expression for the density of states to learn what contributions are important for this zero bias anomaly. So this is formally where we get the self-energy from. So I take a particular disorder configuration, we get the full Green's function out of the exact diagonalization, and the bare Green's function is easy to derive, to write down. It's for a 12-site lattice, it's just a 12 by 12 matrix. You do the matrix inverses, and you get this sigma ij there. The next step is sort of an interpretive step. We remark that the local Green's function, so this local Green's function electron starts its life at site I, finishes its life at site I sometime later. You Fourier transform that, and the imaginary part of this is the local density of states. This can always be written in this form here. So frequency, local site energy, local self energy, and then lambda, which includes everything else. And this everything else really means the hybridization to the rest of the lattice, right? When you, if you didn't have coupling, if you were in the atomic limit, your exact Green's function would just be the first three terms. But coupling to the limit shows, the lattice shows up in this last term here. And if we were to go back and think about the Hartree-Fock problem, This is the term that can change the exchange self-energy that was responsible for the zero bias anomaly. This first term in Hartree-Fock contains the Hartree potential. It's the renormalization of the site potentials. It's the screening of the disorder potential that gets hidden inside this diagonal sigma here. Okay. In the Hubbard model, this diagonal sigma is the thing that changes you from having a single peak in the density of states to having a pair of peaks in the density of states. So this is what gives you your lower and upper Hubbard orbitals. So I can invert this expression, and it's useful because I want to talk about this quantity lambda, this hybridization function. So the two things I'm using to characterize what the self-energy is doing is the local self-energy and non-local effects, which are hidden in this hybridization function. All right. So these appear directly in this expression for the density of states here. And I'm not going to derive this for you, obviously, but what I can do is motivate a little bit what it means. This equation is valid if we're not too far from the atomic limit. And what you see is that both the self-energy and the hybridization function show up in it, and that there are two terms. And the first term comes from sites where the lower Hubbard orbital is giving you spectral weight at the Fermi energy. So site one here has poles at E1 and E1 plus U. And the pole at E1 is the one that's giving me spectral weight at the energy E, where I'm interested. The second term here comes from sites where it's the upper Hubbard orbital that's giving me spectral weight at the Fermi energy. And so that would be site two in this picture. Here, site two is well down below the Fermi energy, but E2 plus U is right at the Fermi energy. So those are the two things that are giving me density of states at the Fermi energy. And that's what these two terms represent. Now, the other thing that's important is that this depends on derivatives of the self-energy. And that makes sense, because the self-energy and the hybridization function, they're telling you about shifts in the locations of the poles of your Green's function. So they tell you about the shifts in the peaks of your density of states. If everything is shifted uniformly, all that does is move your density of states to the right or to the left by a rigid amount. You get features like zero bias anomalies when the shifts depend a lot on energy. So it's these derivatives that are showing up. Okay? And so we're going to use this to distinguish local and non-local contributions to the density of states. This figure on the left, it's a fairly messy figure, but it's just a plot of the four things appearing in the denominator here. All right, so let's focus on the lower Hubbard band. So that's the magenta curve and the solid green curve here. And what you'll notice is that the self-energy, the local self-energy, the slope is always negative. So if we ask, what does a negative slope do to this density of states here, we find that it's actually enhancing the density of states at the Fermi energy. So we're actually getting an enhancement of the density of states at the Fermi energy due to the local self-energy. Okay? On the other hand, the non-local self-energy, the lambda, the hybridization function, is positive, and that means it's suppressing the density of states. Not only is it positive, but it's positive and it depends dramatically on E. It's a very rapidly varying function of energy. So what this is telling us is that this V-shaped dip in the density of states is due to the hybridization function. Okay? So this is further evidence that this is not simple knot physics. Okay. And you can do the same argument for the upper Hubbard band and your upper Hubbard orbitals, and you find the same thing. Okay, now, we've made a number of approximations in this expression for the density of states, so it's important to do a self-consistency check. And that self-consistency check is to take these four curves, stick them into this formula here, calculate the density of states, and see how that compares with the density of states you get directly out of your exact diagonalization calculations. So the exact density of states is this noisy green curve here, and the approximate density of states you get out of this formula here is the red curve. And you can see that the agreement is really very good. And so this suggests that this approach that we're using makes a lot of sense. Okay. So can we say anything about what this self-energy actually is? What we have tried is looking at, take an equation of motion approach to the Hubbard model, you get a hierarchy of equations, and they give you a continued fraction form for the Green's function, which means that you get a continued fraction form for the self-energy, and this is just the leading order piece of the self-energy. So if I was somehow magically able to include all terms in this continued fraction, this would be the exact non-local self-energy. It's not exact because I don't know how to go much farther than what you see here. It gets very complicated very quickly. But what's really interesting in this expression is this Pij, because this is telling you this correlation function, this is the dominant correlation function, which is important for the non-local self-energy. And this Pij is this expression here. The first two terms, these are charge fluctuations. These are dynamical charge fluctuations. The second term is a spin exchange. And again, we're in a paramagnetic phase here. There's no broken symmetry. So this represents a dynamical process. And the last term is a pair hopping term. This is at least an order of magnitude smaller than the other two. So I'm just going to drop it from the conversation at this point. So it really is these two types of processes which, according to this calculation, are responsible for the off-diagonal self-energy, which is in turn responsible for the zero bias anomaly. Okay. So we do a sanity check. I take that expression, which I just showed you on the previous slide for the self-energy. I can stick it into an equation for the hybridization function. I haven't shown you this equation before, but it's exact if everything on the right-hand side is exact. The thing that's approximate is this. So I stick that expression in, and I calculate the hybridization function, and then I calculate the density of states, and I compare with the exact density of states, and you can see that the agreement is pretty good. Okay? 5 minutes. Okay, thanks very much. All right, so this suggests that we're not too far off. I mean, we're not doing perfectly because we are completely ignoring what are fairly complicated details of the pole structure of this self-energy. But it seems like, you know, it's all right. It's okay. All right, so let me just finish up here. So it seems like it's coming from charge and spin fluctuations. Now, the last point I want to make, which is quite interesting, I want to go back to this level repulsion picture. You remember that for the Hartree-Fock, the level repulsion was between states above and below the Fermi energy. Here, there's a real asymmetry in what's going on with the lower Hubbard orbitals and what's going on with the upper Hubbard orbitals. And if you actually think about where is this coming from, okay, the magenta curve in the atomic limit corresponds to this contribution to the density of states. These are singly occupied sites belonging to the lower Hubbard band. And the blue curve corresponds to this blue curve. So these are singly occupied sites belonging to the upper Hubbard band. So this strongly suggests that the level repulsion is actually happening between orbitals belonging to different bands. So sites with the lower Hubbard orbital and sites with the upper Hubbard orbital are repelling each other. Whoops, wrong way here. So I don't want to run too much over, so I think I'll just cut to the answer. You can analyze this hybridization function for a two-site system, and all that you'd need to take away from this picture is that if I look at the slope of this curve, it's non-zero if the second site belongs to the upper Hubbard band, and the slope is zero if the second site belongs to the lower Hubbard band. And so that tells you that, yes, indeed, the level repulsion is occurring in a scenario like this. I have site one, which is lower Hubbard orbital, and site two, it's the upper Hubbard orbital, which is near EF, and the level repulsion is between these two orbitals. So again, this is very different from what happens in conventional metals. All right, so I'll just conclude here. What's clear about this zero bias anomaly in the Anderson-Hubbard model is that it goes well beyond at least the conventional sort of perturbative Altshuler-Aronoff way of thinking about zero bias anomalies in metals. It comes from non-local self-energy, which in itself comes from dynamical charge and spin fluctuations. It's level repulsion between lower and upper Hubbard orbitals. And this behavior is very non-mean field. All right, thank you very much.
So the density of state you're talking about is the mean value of the density of state of different realizations, right?
It's the disorder average density
of states. Yeah, the FH value. So what the distribution look like?
What does the distribution of site energies or the distribution?
The density of state.
Well, so what happens
it's
is.
Gaussian, right?
No, no, it's box distributed. So it's a uniform distribution. So the original site energies are uniformly distributed. The actual density of states doesn't look too different from this figure here, right? So the density of states is small out in the wings, there's a peak near the middle, and then there's a V-shape carved out of that. Okay, things get broadened because the hopping smears things out a little bit, doesn't make the you know, you no longer have integer fillings on the sites, but it's essentially, this, is that what you're asking, what the disorder average density of states?
Okay. Actually, my question is, so you plot the density of state with respect to energy.
Yeah.
Okay, but for different realization, they have different density of state.
Yeah, so for different realizations, you have
what the distribution with respect to different realization.
Okay, so these site energies are box distributed. And roughly speaking, so that means a uniform distribution. Okay, you have a pair of poles, so the lower Hubbard orbitals are uniformly distributed, and the upper Hubbard orbitals are also uniformly distributed. Okay, so you have two uniform distributions that are offset by the Hubbard U. Okay. Sure.
So, if there's some special feature of the density of state in the non-intermittent case or in the case without disorder, so what you will expect for the zero bias anomaly? Let's say I have a frustrated lattice. I have a flat band cut the Fermi surface.
So we have done density
of state infinity.
Yeah, we've looked at. Okay, so I don't know. I mean, from past experience and other problems, special symmetries can have effects on these kinds of physics. Okay, there's been, for example, a big debate about what happens in just the two-dimensional Hubbard model at half filling, and there you've got special symmetries, and you can get. I mean, the problem is somehow marginal in that you can get different answers depending on how you choose your disorder distribution. We have looked at frustrating this by adding a T prime to the model, and you still get a zero bias anomaly. So it's fairly robust physics. No, within the exact diagonalization. Yeah, at the front here. You're going to see a fairly discrete spectrum locally, right? We're in a fairly large disorder limit for this analysis. And so you're going to see a local spectrum which varies significantly as you move around your sample. I presume you could do something like level statistics with that in some kind of crude. That's a really interesting question. Turns out you can't really Fourier transform a 12-site cluster, right? There's not a lot of K points when you do that. That's a really interesting question. I'd love to be able to address that.